Hey, welcome back. I got an amazing episode for you today. I'm talking with Jeremy S. Adams, the author of The Secrets of Timeless Teachers, Instruction That Works in Every Generation, published this year, 2016. He's going to get into his six habits of timeless teaching, which you're going to love this. Great advice. He is a teacher still, and matter of fact, the day that we talked, he's getting ready to teach summer school. Amazing energy, amazing passion. And just wait, you're going to hear him talk about some cool stuff like this. This is from his introduction. Impactful teachers possess a medley of characteristics and habits that distinguish them from the proverbial herd. Yeah, we're going to talk about that and so much more. Thanks for being here. Enjoy.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, did you know that we're now available on Google Play Music? Check us out there. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. Today I'm talking with Jeremy S. Adams, author of the book, The Secrets of Timeless Teachers, Instruction That Works in Every Generation, published by Roman and Littlefield, 2016. Jeremy Adams has been a teacher at Bakersfield High School in California since 1998 and a lecturer of political science at California State University, Bakersfield, since 2006. The author of a critically acclaimed memoir, Empty Selves, Reflections on a Decade of Teaching in an American High School from 2012, he is a regular contributor and columnist for the national online journal, The Educator's Room, and has contributed editorials to the Washington Post, among other online and print outlets. He has won numerous accolades for his teaching, including the 2014 California State Teacher of the Year Award from the Daughters of the American Revolution. Also, he is the founder of the Earl Warren Constitutional Competition and lives in Bakersfield, California with his wife and three children. Welcome, Jeremy. Say hi to everyone.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here and to talk about the book and education and all things teaching.
Well, cool. Just so you know, audience, he's getting ready to go in the classroom. So he is he's a teacher. He's a practitioner, not just someone who's written a book. So
I'm definitely in the trenches here in summer school. No question about that.
Excellent. Jeremy, I just wanted to remind everyone that you currently do teach in a high school. And so let's start by talking about kids. What do you like most about working with teenagers?
The thing about teenagers is I get to laugh every single day of my life. Sometimes it's a laugh of frustration, but usually I laugh because students, young people are just funny, and they look at the world differently than we adults do. My lovely wife is an attorney, and I guarantee she goes many days without laughing at all, and I get to laugh every single day. And the other thing I love about teaching is that I find that, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds, they're at a point in their lives where they're going to be influenced. They're trying to figure out their lives. They're trying to figure out where they're going to go. They're trying to figure out who they want to be. And there's no question that teenagers are influential. They're going to be influenced by something, and it might as well be me and the things that I teach and hopefully the magic of the subject that I bring to them on a daily basis. So I love laughing, and I love obviously trying to influence young people into a better life.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Let's go ahead and use that to go ahead and dive into timeless teachers. Who would you say is the perfect audience for your book?
Well, it's a little bit of a hybrid, but I would tell you, no question about it, the primary audience would be aspiring teachers, brand new teachers. I write in the book, and this is something that every teacher knows, and that is that when you're in the very beginning of your career, you're going through this really complex process of trying to become a teacher self. You're trying to figure out who you want to be in the classroom. And the argument of my book is that great teaching, extraordinary teaching, teaching that uplifts, inspires, and stays with you for a lifetime, the habits and the behaviors that create that kind of extraordinary outcome, those behaviors don't change over time. Somebody who was a great teacher 50 years ago is doing the exact same thing that a great teacher is doing today. And if you were to peer into the future, you would recognize great teachers. So, you know, my goal is to demystify, you know, timeless teaching, and to say that, you know, somebody who's a great teacher, they have certain behaviors and they have certain very actionable methods of instruction, and new teachers and aspiring teachers can become better teachers by learning the truths of timeless teaching. That instead of trying to be trendy, of any industry in America, of any profession, and there is no profession that goes from crisis to crisis that has more of a bunker mentality than teachers. You know, we every 4 or 5 years we try and reinvent the wheel of instruction. And the argument of my book is that if you're a new teacher, rather than burying yourself in the fat of the moment, it would be much better to master the timeless truths that won't change no matter what you're teaching, what subject, or when you're teaching. So, you know, you have 62% of new teachers who feel like they're not prepared for the realities of the classroom. You have 1.6 million teachers retiring. Let me say that again. That's a huge number, 1.6 million retiring in the next 10 years. So, you know, my argument for my population of readers, hopefully, is if you want to be a timeless teacher, start here. Start with the things that are never going to change over time.
That's awesome. That's, you know, and it's so real. I coach teachers now, and especially ones who struggle in the classroom, I try and get into the classroom to help them and work with them. And so all of your habits just are so speak forward from the teachers who do so well in the classroom. And it is something that's missing oftentimes with the teacher who does struggle in the classroom.
And what's interesting about it is, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, the book's been out for about a month and a half now, and I'm hoping that, you know, I'm just starting to get some feedback here, and it's been really probably the most wonderful part of writing it is starting to get feedback from my people. I mean, I'm a teacher, you know, my parents were both teachers, my best friends are teachers, all I've ever done is teach, so these are my people. So it's nice to start to get some feedback, and one of the nice things that you hear, kind of going to what you said a minute ago, is that, you know, this is a book that could have been written 40 years ago, and it could be written 40 years in the future, and yet the truth of it isn't going to change at all. So hopefully anybody who's struggling or new to the classroom will always find some help here with this book, I'm hoping.
That's excellent, and I think they will. I've read your book now, and it's just, it's right there on the money with those habits. I want to pull something from the introduction. You say impactful teachers possess a medley of characteristics and habits that distinguish them from the proverbial herd. So let's use this because you have 6 habits of timeless teaching. And so if we could kind of use that to kind of segue into it, that little statement there.
Primarily, my argument is that, you know, timeless teachers, they tend to define success differently than a conventional teacher. You know, a lot of teachers, especially, you know, we're coming off of a decade where public policy in education, as you well know, has been very much oriented around testing at the end of the year, and around those benchmarks of, you know, how's the student done after this year or after this semester or after this unit. And I think a timeless teacher, you know, as I said in the very first chapter of the book, they pass the rearview mirror test. In other words, sometimes, you know, when you're in a teacher's classroom, in the moment you don't like them or you don't understand why they're doing what they're doing, or they make you work harder than you want to work, or make you learn something you're not initially curious about. And yet a timeless teacher looks in the long run of life. You know, when you look in the rearview mirror of life, you know, I think of some of my greatest teachers that I didn't love at the moment, and yet I look back on them, and they were truly doing extraordinarily impactful things for me that made me be a better person and live a better life. And so I would say timeless teachers define a victory different than a goal. I mean, it's not that you don't want your students to have success on the tests. It's not that you want them to do poorly on any unit. You do. And we have a lot of victories in education. And when you give a good lecture or when you have students pass a test, you have good state test scores or a good SAT, that's great. That's wonderful. That's a good victory. But a timeless teacher remembers that the goal is much broader and much richer than that. You know, the broader goal of education is, and I'm, and I'll be honest, I think you can tell already that I'm a bleeding heart classroom romantic who is unapologetic for the fact that I think that magic exists, and it doesn't exist at Disneyland, and it's not necessarily Christmas time, it's in the classroom. And timeless teachers understand that the goal of education is to kind of inject that enchantment, that grandeur of education, to try and allow students to live a better life for themselves individually and as a culture collectively. I think education is the key to that. I'm very Jeffersonian in that belief. So that's the real difference, I would say, is they define a goal differently than a victory.
I love that, and I love what you're talking about, because you do hear that passion, and when you read your words, also you feel that passion that you're talking about.
It's funny, when students read the book, they say, "I can hear you talking. It sounds like you," which I guess that's a compliment. I hope it is. I don't know.
I think it's a compliment, because I it's funny, because hearing your voice, you hear everything that you talk about in the book, and it's just awesome. You feel that energy that you have for it. As you've kind of touched on a little bit, your six habits are passing the rearview mirror test, teaching in front and the back of the classroom, becoming an expert in your subject, being a continual innovator, being a dynamic communicator, and striking a balance, the three E's of timeless teaching: education, entertainment, and edification. What I'd like to do is, could you just, let's touch on a couple of them for just a second. Can you talk a little bit about what teaching the front and the back room, back of the classroom is?
Well, it's a metaphor. I mean, it's not literally teaching in the back of the classroom, but it is about this idea that if you ask a student, you know, who was a great teacher, who made a difference in your life, you know, it's interesting, because they tend not to talk about the actual lessons. They tend not to talk about the instruction, which is interesting, because we think of what teachers do. We think about them, you know, imparting knowledge. But if you ask an individual, you know, who made a difference in your life, it tends to be because they had a kind of deeper personal connection to the students. One of your earlier podcasts I really enjoyed, you were talking to your Georgia State Teacher of the Year, and I'm sure you remember how you talked about how, you know, at the beginning of every day he would greet every student, or he would comment on their hair or their shoes. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do, very much so.
And I thought to myself, that guy is very good at teaching in the back of the classroom. He's really good at creating that personal connection to the students. It's interesting, if you ask college students who are a little older than really what my, you know, what I'm going for, like, you know, elementary and high school teachers, but still, if you ask older people, what was the number one thing that you valued in a teacher? They talk about rapport. They talk about that personal connection that they had to the teacher. That, you know, I have a sense of belonging in the classroom. That this teacher, they teach a subject, but more than the subject, they teach the person. They teach the human being sitting in front of them. And students who feel like they're being touched in a positive impact, in a positive way, feel that the teacher sees this as a collaboration between not just the student, but also them as well, the teacher, that we're on this journey together, and that it's the teacher's invested in the success of the student. You know, one of the things I tell new teachers is, if students who don't do well, if that doesn't bother you, don't be a teacher. It's okay to be disappointed sometimes. And in fact, the fact that you're disappointed, you're frustrated with your students sometimes, that's good. That means that you care. That means that you're invested in their success. And so that's what I mean by teaching in the back of the classroom as well, trying to get to know your students. And, you know, that's also why I write this in the book a little bit, and I know this probably is not fashionable to say, but, you know, I love technology. You know, I use Twitter. I have a YouTube channel now. I love technology in the classroom, but, you know, I say in the book to be very careful about technology when it comes to using it to replace a teacher. It's okay to supplement, I think, your class, but, you know, a teacher can never replace a teacher. A technology can never replace a teacher. A smart board can't replace a smart teacher. That at the end of the day, it's the personal connection. It's teaching in the back of the classroom that makes the impact.
Oh, you're so right. That is something that the political arena, the pundits that want to talk about anything but that power of a good teacher in the classroom, that quality teacher in the classroom, because all this other stuff is just stuff. It's that connection that the teacher makes with the kids that you're talking about. It's so important. It's so right. It's just so
that,
right on.
That's so true, isn't it? That you know, our policymakers, you know, God love them. You know, I'm not somebody who has a lot. You know, I'm not cynical about every policymaker. But I think sometimes there's this misguided idea that if we could just discover something new and then have every teacher in America do this new thing, that we could magically solve every educational failure that we have. And it's not true. At the end of the day, technology is a tool. It's not a wholesale replacement for the touch of a teacher's humanity. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, technology is great, And it can kind of, you know, help students get interested in the subject. Absolutely. I think teaching, you have to go into the student's terrain sometimes. That's something I've learned in the last few years, is you have to go to where the students are at times. But at the end of the day, I don't think that a TED Talk or a YouTube channel can replace a teacher who asks you, how's your day, or what's wrong, or why didn't we do well on this test? That personal connection is the difference between, you know, just getting information versus timeless teaching.
So much so. That's just so spot on. That's, you know, that is the difference. I mean, if you ask anybody who, what you remember most about the teacher that you liked, or the one who made a difference in your life, they almost always go to something that's all about that personal connection that was made.
Yes, yes. And yet, we don't talk about that a lot, do we? It's interesting.
Nope.
We have a lot of interesting conversations in education, and they're all interesting. I mean, you're talking about who should be writing curriculum, how much testing should we be giving, what is our funding matrix, and these are all, you know, interesting and important questions. But at the end of the day, you ask a student who made a difference in your life, they don't talk about those things. They talk about the humanity of the teacher, and that's what we don't talk about a lot, and that's one of the things I hope to prompt through the writing of the book.
I love it, because that's... You're so much right. Those conversations are not happening, and they need to. And you do an excellent job of delving into it. Let's move forward into one of your habits has to do with being a dynamic communicator. Tell them what that is.
Well, you know, I think that this is by far of the six that I talk about. This is the hardest one to teach. You know, what you'll find is a lot of timeless teachers, a lot of extraordinary teachers. The bottom line is they have charisma. They have an energy about them.
Right.
My father was a great teacher. He said something that I don't agree with, but he said, you know, great teachers are born, they're not made. I don't necessarily agree with that, and I think that mentality kind of hampers our development as teachers. But he is right about the fact that some people are just made for the classroom. You know, these are the kinds of people that star in Hollywood movies, right? This is John Keating. This is Mr. Holland's Opus.
Right.
This is Dangerous Minds. Those people who just have an energy about them and an ability to communicate the subject and the importance of what they teach. But you don't have to be Cicero. You know, you don't have to be Barack Obama. You don't have to be this great orator in order to be a great communicator. If you think about it, think of all the things that have to happen well, that have to be successfully communicated in order for a classroom to work. You know, you have to communicate expectations to the students. You have to communicate directions and content, and also hopefully at least a patina of passion for what you're doing. All of those things, all of those outcomes have to be communicated one way or another, and timeless teachers are very good at getting those points across. Sometimes they are great speakers, sometimes they do have great charisma, but sometimes they're very good at making those personal connections as a form for communication as well. And so there are many paths towards being a great communicator, but make no mistake, timeless teachers are great at communicating all of those things to their students.
That's excellent. That's, you know, one of the areas that I, in working with teachers that struggle, oftentimes that's they don't do a good job of being able to communicate even just what they want the kids to do in the classroom, nevertheless, you know, getting into the dynamic range.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I think it's so important to, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, I think it's really important, the first impression in a classroom. I mean, I don't know how many of your listeners feel this way, but I've been teaching for 18 years, and I still get nervous a little bit every day, but I'm still very nervous on that first day of school. And the reason for that is because there's a lot that's at stake. Young people, you know, that first impression can do a lot. And if you have a bad first day, if you don't communicate your expectations and the directions and, you know, communicate success. I mean, that's so important to be able to communicate what success looks like in your classroom. Because if you can't do that, it's hard for the kids to know what to do. So, you know, you can communicate it in any number of ways, but that first impression, being excellent at communication on that first day will pay dividends for the whole year.
I got to tell you, I was like a kid getting ready for school when I was a teacher and an administrator getting ready for school. I always loved that first day and the first week, you know, just getting ready for that excitement, because you're so right. That first impression is you get a chance to explain what's going on, who you are, what's going to happen, and get to know them and hopefully make a very good impression that they want to be where you are, that they want to be part of it.
And that's also the day where you're, you know, the students and you are a little bit on an even keel. I mean, they... You know, you're in control technically, but you don't know them yet. They don't know you. You have nothing to fall back on as far as, you know, if you have a bad day in the middle of March, that's fine. Hopefully you've built up, you know, 6 months of good classes, and they'll forgive you. But on the first day, the pressure is on for sure, and a lot of teachers, I think, should zero in on that first day as a way of being great communicators. Hopefully,
very much so. So let's go to the three E's: education, entertainment, and edification.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Well, you know, this is almost, to be perfectly honest, this is almost what I wrote the whole entire book about. And this is, you know, my chapters of my book are like my children. I love them all the same, right? But I would say this last chapter is one that is, to me, the essence of timeless teaching. And it's what I call my triangular theory of timeless teaching, or teaching perfection. And that is, any successful classroom, you know, any day, any one day, I think to really have the impact on a student that you want it to have, you have to have what I call the three E's: education, entertainment, and edification. And there are three questions that all students should be able to answer in a classroom. You know, what are we learning? Right, that's the educational part of it. You know, there's some skill, there's some knowledge that we're trying to impart to these young people. How are we learning it? And hopefully, and I don't apologize for this, I think your classroom should be fun. I think it should be entertaining. Doesn't mean you're goofing around at all, but it's great when the students are smiling. It's great when they're not looking at their watches. You know, you need to be able to appeal to the head, the heart, the belly. You know, make them laugh, make them interested, make them, feel emotional reaction to the material being taught. So, you know, that's education and that's entertainment. But the last one, Steve, I'll tell you, is the one that we don't talk about in education, and that is edification. This idea of this question of why am I learning this information? Some teachers, you know, bristle at having to explain why their subject is important to students, and yet I feel like that is a golden opportunity to reveal the magic and the majesty of what you're doing in the classroom. And this is where I'm a bit of an educational romantic, I'll be honest. You know, probably my favorite quote on education is from Aristotle. Aristotle said, the purpose of life is not only to live, but to live well. And I think it's important to be able to explain to your students and to show them that living well requires a broad exposure to the possibilities of life, and that the classroom is a door, it's a portal to those possibilities. That, you know, edifying education makes the world bigger and richer and more pregnant with possibilities. And you know, that I remember, I don't know about you, but I remember the very first time I fell deeply in love with a subject. And I got a sense that my world had just gotten bigger. And when the world gets bigger, it makes my life better. You know, I think sometimes our policymakers and the public think of teachers as just, you know, people who are instilling information, or they're just practitioners of information. But I think that education should be edifying. I think that great teachers are not practitioners of information, they're artists of human transformation, and we should use the enchantment of the classroom to communicate that. So, you know, I think when those three E's are there, education, entertainment, edification, you kind of, you know, balance the three, there's a sweet spot there, and that's when the extraordinary magical elements of education can come to life.
Oh, I love that. From the head and the heart to the, just that whole idea of what you make me think of are the kids that connect with an adult in the building. And you do see that transformation because they connect, they buy into, and they love what's happening. And it's just, you know, it's an amazing part that you can't bottle with what good teachers do.
It's funny you say that too, because I'll tell you right now, you know, I mean, teachers, you know, good teachers, and I talk about this in the book, good teachers tend to like a lot of different things about teaching. I mean, I love my subject. I love being around young people. I love the calendar. I mean, I don't go from January to January. I go from, you know, September to September. There's a lot of things I love about teaching, but I'll tell you right now, and I know a lot of your listeners are teachers, and hopefully they understand this, maybe once or twice a year, there'll be a moment where you're not even teaching content anymore. If you are, it's not about a test. And there's a few fleeting moments in a classroom sometimes where you can tell that learning digs a little bit deeper, and you can tell that the students, they're thinking thoughts that they'd never thought before. They're feeling emotions they'd never felt before. There's a kind of a pulse of possibility, I guess, that they never knew was there. And when that happens, it doesn't last long. And you're right, you can't bottle it up, but when you get to that juncture in a class sometimes, it is enchantment, it's grandeur, it's all the big words wrapped into one, and when that happens, no teaching award, no number of books sold, nothing can take the place of it.
That's awesome. Let's use what we've talked about now to kind of answer this question. Do you think that continuing ed is vital for an impactful teacher?
You know what? I do. I absolutely do. But I would tell you, though, that it has to be done with the right attitude. You know, one of the things that you see in American education is we devote a lot less time to continuing education and to collaboration than most other Western democracies do. But, you know, I've been in a lot of teacher workshops and a lot of conferences where, you know, it's mandatory. And, you know, that's why one of the things I talk about in the book is that timeless teachers are continual innovators. You know, they always want to get better. And, you know, one of the things that you see, you know, you asked a question about continuing education. One of the things you see, and this is probably isn't popular for me to say this, but I'll be honest, it's very easy to be an average teacher. If you want to be average, if you don't want to work that hard, I mean, the first few years of teaching are tough for everybody. But if you just, you know, once you get your tests written and your shtick together, if you want to be average, if you want to do that, you can oftentimes. And it's sad. But I think timeless teachers are different. I think people who are, you know, making that extraordinary impact in the lives of young people, they have this, you know, what we call a growth mentality, right? They always feel that they can get better, that they can grow. And that, you know, that requires us to do something that's kind of uncomfortable, and that is, you know, sometimes to admit that we're not doing the best job that we can do. I know anybody who's listening to this podcast is going to know this sensation is when you've done a lesson for, you know, 10 years, or you've done the same lecture, or you've done the same thing, and it's always worked, and then all of a sudden, boom, it stops working, and you're like, what happened? What did the kids change? Did I change? And I think if you have a growth mentality, if you're self-reflective, you'll say, you know what? What I did is not working anymore. It's kind of like, you know, those of us who've reached middle age and we realize that we can't eat the same things we used to eat and stay the same weight. Things have got to change. It's the same thing in a classroom. You've got to change. The students will change over time, and you have to have that mentality that I need to get better. I need to adjust.
I love that because it is so right. Because every group's different, and you're going to find some child who's going to challenge you, your understanding of the world.
Absolutely. But I do think though you're right. I think collaboration is key though. I mean, I think you can continually get better on your own. That's fine. I mean, every summer I try and read, you know, a few books that deal with a subject that I feel like I need to be better on in my what I teach in history and political science. But I'll tell you, I think the best continuing education happens when you're around people you enjoy, you know, your teacher friends. Every morning of my life, to be honest, one of my best friends in all the world I teach with. And, you know, every morning on the way into work, we have a 20-minute conversation. And I can't tell you how powerful those conversations have been to make me better. You know, we come up with a lot of good ideas, and we talk about our day, and we talk about what we can be doing better, and what failed, and what's annoying, and what's inspiring. So, yeah, I think collaboration is key for continuing education, no question about it.
That's excellent. Having those conversations with colleagues just can really inspire you, and I love what you say about that. Let me ask you this. You know, in this world that we're in today, there are many reasons for today's teachers to get down and have a difficult time staying positive. What advice would you give them for overcoming this?
You know, it is interesting to hear you say that because, you know, I just started summer school. And at the end of the year, you do get worn down. I mean, you know, even timeless teachers have their bad days or their grumpy dispositions at times. But, you know, since your question is, you know, what would I say to people who are, you know, trying to stay positive and feel like they're getting down? I think maybe there's one or two things I'd say about that. The first thing is that, and this, you know, I'm not trying to be cynical, but the truth is many of us teach difficult populations. And, you know, we teach in a broken society where students are coming from a background that's not always conducive to great learning. And the bottom line is that sometimes teachers are the most important adult influence in the lives of their students. It shouldn't be that way. It should be mom and dad. It should be brother and sister. It should be aunt and uncle. It should be church. It should be community. It should be all of these things. You know, in a perfect world, all the teacher does is teach. But that's not necessarily the case for a lot of places in American society where the teacher is the most important adult influence that young people have. So if you're feeling down or you're feeling like you're not having an impact, understand that, you know, we really don't know what's happening at home. We don't really understand, many of us, the situations that students are coming from. I mean, I think anybody who teaches in an urban setting the way I do can tell you a number of horror stories about, you know, what students bring into the classroom. Now, we have a job to do no matter what students bring into the classroom. But, you know, the older I get, and I know this sounds kind of silly, but the older I get, the more I think that great teaching is not just about giving them, you know, skills and information. It's about modeling substantive adulthood. What does it look like to be a good citizen? What does it look like to be a good person, a good husband, a good wife, a good father, a good friend? What does it look like to take life seriously, to respect your fellow citizen? What does it look like to be inspired? So, you know, if you're down, remember, your classroom is filled with kids, and they're watching you every single day. You don't know what those kids are going to remember 10, 20, 30 years from now. And sometimes you don't know the impact you can have on a young person. You know, sometimes at the end of the year, you know, you'll get these letters from students who are really appreciative. And I know that every teacher who cares loves those letters. That's what we live for. You know, the gift card to Starbucks is nice, but the handwritten note from the kid is what we live for and what we teach for. And sometimes, you know, you get one from a student who you didn't think you had that impact on. So, you know, stay inspired, stay positive, because you don't know what kid, what student is going to be impacted by what you're teaching them, is what I'd say.
Thank you. That's awesome advice. I love that. And you're right. You do live for those letters.
I think every teacher, you know, and I'll be honest, I've saved mine for 18 years.
Nice.
You know, if my school was on fire, you know, forget my computer, forget the books. I have a file that has all of the letters. I've never told anybody this. I guess I'm doing it in a very public way now. but I would go for all of those letters, because to me that's, you know, the difficult thing about teaching is, you know, doctors have patients, right? Lawyers have clients. Artists have their art. But we teachers, we don't have that. You know, our symphony, our magnum opus, it disappears when graduation day comes, and they go out into the world, and it's heartbreaking sometimes because you don't hear from 99% of them. And so really our work, our corpus is, to me, are those letters. And that's why I would save those. I would run in and grab them.
That's awesome. I love that. I have yearbooks that I had kids sign, and I would want to save those. I understand.
Yeah.
Totally. Along with the letters and such. Awesome. So, well, as we're getting close to closing, I have just a couple more questions. And one of them is, if someone wanted to connect further with you, where would you send them? And I have show notes where I'll put links and so forth, but where would you send them to connect further with you?
You know, you can. I'm on Twitter, so you can follow me at Jeremy Adams 6, so capital J-E-R-E-M-Y, capital A-D-A-M-S 6. And, you know, my book is available everywhere. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Google Books. Somebody told me it's even available on Kmart. So, nice. You know, I'll, any place and every place the book is available. This summer, I'll be keynoting at, I'll be speaking at the California Teachers Summit. So yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you can go to the Bakersfield High School website or California State University Bakersfield and find my email. If anybody wants to write me an email about the book, I'd love to hear from readers. It's wonderful when I do.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So in closing, here are my last two questions. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
I would say that the number one piece of advice that I would tell them is, there's going to, in a teaching career, there's going to come a moment. And there's going to be a moment when you realize that you're not the teacher you always imagined yourself to be, right? That there's going to be a chasm that erupts between what you're doing in the classroom and what you thought you'd be doing in the classroom. And that could take any number of forms. It could be what you're teaching, the way that you're teaching, the population you're teaching. And when you make that realization that there's this gap between who you are and who you want it to be, you can use that moment to either rejuvenate your career or it can be debilitating as well. You know, and that moment can happen, there's any number of ways that moment can happen. But if you're a young teacher, understand that it's not an easy profession. It's not an easy profession to stay motivated sometimes, and it's not an easy profession to always try and get better in, because oftentimes there's nobody pushing you to get better other than yourself. And to me, and this is, you know, this is not pedagogy at all, and this is probably not something that you would talk about in a school of education, But for me, you know, that moment that rejuvenated me was when I became a father for the very first time. And I know a lot of people who are listening to this have children. And the thing that shocked me about becoming a father was, you know, I thought I knew what love is. You know, I'm married to the love of my life, and I love my parents, and I love my siblings, and I love my friends. But when I became a father, I realized that there really aren't enough symphonies, sonnets, or sunsets in the universe to describe the feeling you have for your child. The word love isn't big enough. And once I felt that, I realized, my goodness, you know, my classroom is filled with young people who have parents who love them the way that I love my daughter. And I want for my daughter the absolute best. I want the best opportunities, the best teachers. And so it really motivated me to be an even better teacher and to say, you know, I owe it to all of these young people to give them the best education that they could ever have. So, you know, I would tell young people, you know, be aware that that moment comes, but use it to rejuvenate. And that's the hope of my book, is that I hope that, yeah, yes, it's aimed largely at young people who are going into education or in the very beginning, but I hope that it's also for people who are in the middle of their career. One of the things that I realized by writing the book is just how good I am not. That I'm not a timeless teacher. I'm writing, you know, my book is not about me. It's about the teacher I wish I was. And a lot of the things I write about are things that I need to get better on. So that's what I would tell the, you know, new teachers, is to, you know, always be self-reflective and be aware that that moment is probably going to come in your career at some point.
Thanks, Jeremy. And by the way, I kind of think you're probably being very humble there, because I get the feeling that there is a little more of you in this book than you're letting on.
Well, there's a lot of me. There's no question about it. But it's really not. It's not about me in any way.
Oh, I got
it. It is about, I think, this idea that the best way to improve education is to have the habits of timeless teachers proliferate as widely as possible.
Awesome. Finally, do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? And if given a chance to say thank you, who would it be, and what would you say?
You know, first of all, my father my father is a timeless teacher. My father is one of the greatest teachers I ever knew, I ever had. But I would tell you that the greatest teacher I ever had was in college, and he knows it, because the Secrets of Timeless Teachers is the second book that I've written. It's the first one that that's a big national publisher. But I wrote a memoir 4 years ago that did pretty well in the region, called Full Classrooms, Empty Selves. And there's a whole chapter about the greatest teacher I ever had. I went to college in Virginia, even though I'm from California. I went to college at Washington and Lee University in Lexington, Virginia. And I had a young professor. It was his first year. And he walked into the classroom. I remember he was wearing a Snoopy tie. And, you know, I was a very pragmatic, utilitarian learner at that point. Education was all about getting a degree, to get a job, to make money, to be this important person. That's what education was to me. I was steeped in a very pragmatic view of education. And it was a class on political philosophy. And it was the first time that I'd ever been exposed to Plato and Aristotle and the Federalist Papers and de Tocqueville and John Stuart Mill and, you know, the classical works. And I remember him doing what all great teachers do, which is that, you know, he pretty much shook me out of my unreflective state. And he was tough. I remember he wrote on one of my papers, it's a funny story, he wrote that, "You can do better, Jeremy. I think that you're intellectually constipated," which was, you know, pretty brutal at the time, yes, looking back on it. But I think he was, you know, he's the one who passes the rearview mirror test, right? Because, you know, he didn't tell me, you know, what to learn from the books. He told me what books to read. But he respected the joy of discovery. He respected this journey that each individual is on. And what he taught me about education and teaching is that all great teachers, they don't want their students to become like miniature versions of themselves. That great teaching is not indoctrination. That great teachers want their students to become a better version of themselves by coming into contact through the magic of the classroom, right? That by reading, you know, for this professor, by reading Plato and Aristotle and Tolstoy and Dostoevsky and Hemingway, by reading these extraordinary authors, you discover a bit more about yourself. You know, the great writer, Mikhail de Montaigne, once said that, "I study the thoughts of others to know my own thoughts better." And I think that's really what he made me understand, is that he wasn't trying to make me see the world the way that he saw it. He wanted me to see it the way that I saw it, through the enchantment of those books and through learning. And I know that I wouldn't be here if it were not for that professor.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that, Jeremy. I appreciate it. Jeremy, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I wish you the best in all that you do. I encourage my audience.
Wonderful. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you so much. It was great fun.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate you being here, and I look forward to seeing and learning more about what you're doing, and I encourage my audience to check out The Secrets of Timeless Teachers. It's worth your time. I'll have links to how to get in touch with Jeremy as well as find his book in the show notes. And Jeremy, I wish you the best. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me. Best of luck to you.
Thanks. Take care now.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes Store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. Recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the heart of Georgia Precinct.
Hey, did you know that we're now available on Google Play Music? That's right. You can now find Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 on Google Play Music. Check us out.